This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fine. Also, Twitterella fired. So your thoughts on the Flyers in light of yet another shift, another change. And we'll get to some of the highlights from that Phillies victory yesterday. It was exciting on the back end. Not great for a while, but exciting on the back end. We'll play some of the highlights shortly. Let's go to Claire right now in Collinsworth. Good morning, Claire.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hi, Claire.
Hi. First-time caller and perhaps the first-time in-person listener last week at the Borgata with my mom, Sue, if you remember.
Oh, we met Claire Joe last week, and her mom came down and watched the show for an hour.
Nice.
It was pretty cool.
Claire, I was not here, so I did not meet you, but I'm glad.
Lucky Claire.
We were down there for Beat the Hammer specifically, I will say. But yeah, just wanted to thank you guys for like the warm welcome.
So,
and
Claire,
you know,
would you say that Joe let you down?
Maybe a little.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that.
I know. And he should just accept the win for today, too. And it wasn't a poorly worded question.
So. Absolutely.
There you go.
Win with grace. No, Claire, it was so nice to meet you last week.
That's
yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, you too. We had a really good time. But I do have an answer of a duo.
Sure.
Shrek and Donkey.
You got it.
Oh, I like
all right, Claire.
That is a really good one.
I like that.
You got to love Donkey. Joe does not love Donkey. Joe dislikes Donkey.
Well, I haven't seen them.
But you think Eddie Murphy doing animated stuff.
Nonsense.
Is right.
Yeah, totally.
It's
nonsense.
Not nonsense.
Why?
He's really good at it.
Why?
Because
why
Joe
just
thinks
Eddie
it's
Murphy
like
doing
beneath
it?
Him.
Yeah, because, dude, Eddie,
and beneath
dude, Eddie Murphy.
Murphy
was raw.
He thinks it's
and
beneath
then all of
Joe
a sudden he's doing voiceover
that
work.
He's in Shrek.
Do you know who else did, like, Cameron
Shrek.
Diaz voices that?
Yeah, but Cameron Diaz wasn't raw.
Movies.
No.
These are also wonderful movies.
No,
like,
no.
Everyone enjoys
no,
these movies,
no.
Young and old alike.
No.
Like, Joe won't
like
even
Antonio
give Shrek
Banderas,
a chance.
Antonio Banderas, I think.
Yes, he was Axl Rose. What was his name? Axl Foley. He was Axl Foley.
Axl Rose.
I mean, this guy was one of the coolest of all time, and all of a sudden he's doing kids' movies as a voiceover guy. What is that nonsense?
What?
Yeah, and he's awesome at it, and he's hilarious.
What would be the equivalent?
Hold on, real quick. Let me ask you a question.
What?
If they offered you, and at the end, I think he's made like $100 million off
he's
these Shrek
movies.
He's
probably made the most money off of the Shrek
would you do
movies.
It? Would
yeah,
you?
But James, I'm not cool.
It doesn't matter.
Eddie Murphy
like
in the 1980s
the
may have been Eddie Dude, Murphy may have been the most cool guy in the entire
I
1980s.
I agree, and he had to
now
do
he's
like
a talking ass.
3 days. Nicely
done. Nice,
well,
right?
He had 3 days
that
of work for like $100 million. I'd do that too.
Well, yeah, I mean, so would I. But
you go.
Well,
you can't rip the guy. You would love to do what Eddie Murphy did.
Well, I'll say this: if I had done Raw and Delirious and Beverly Hills Cop and Coming to America, I wouldn't need the money. All right.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you know, there are so many people who made tons of money who lost it, right?
And Saturday Night Live. All right, let's get to how it sounded yesterday on the Phils here on WIP. It was, the game was kind of an adventure. It was a million strikeouts early, both teams, particularly when the Phillies were hitting. But the Phils bats came alive in the seventh inning. Let's go through some of the big moments from the game, including Bryce tying it up.
Sims kicks and deals, and the pitch is hit high in the air, deep center field. Young going back to the track, nearing the wall. He's out of room, and Harper with another opening day home run, his first as a Philly. Number 6 in his career to dead center field, and he's tied the game 1-1.
You know, that was a shot, too, because that's center field, and that's also pretty far over the wall. I mean, he drilled that thing. So that was a, all right, the boys, they're showing up here. They're showing us something. And then, of course, it was just two batters later. So you got Bryce in the 2-hole, you got Schwarber in the 4-hole, And Schwarber also goes deep.
The first pitch is hit high in the air, deep right field. On the run, Cruz at the track, looking up at the wall, and it's gone! It clears over the out-of-town scoreboard, and Kyle Schwarber follows Harper with a home run of his own here in the seventh, and the Phillies have taken the lead. It's 2-1.
All right, so you got a 2-1 lead that becomes 3-1 on a wild pitch. Now, John, for those that missed the game.
Kepler scored it.
Yeah, no,
I
did.
Know
yeah.
he really
yeah.
didn't do anything. But no, yeah. in order to get on base again,
nice
Max
double.
Kepler continues to be active and productive.
Yeah. He's sure. huge, too. Like, he is a big boy, Max
You're
Kepler.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
You can feel it when he crouches down in the box. He still looks huge. Yeah.
It's just so much different than everything we've had out there in the outfield the last few years. He feels like a real live MLB player who can get stuff done.
You're saying he's better than Rojas?
It's been a... what we've had out there has just been like a pale...
A
pale fact.
You have to hope he stays healthy because he has a history of
Here's what we'll all remember. Didi's first game with the Phillies, home run.
Wow,
Didi's second game with the Phillies, home run. Didi after that, nothing.
Nada. Why do you have to bring Didi into this?
Because that was a good debut. I mean, I got John giving that Kepler praise here. I'm just saying, grain of salt. It's taking the we'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
I get you.
All right, now, John, give the audience, for those that missed it, because the Phillies, of course, in our sequence here have a 2-1 lead, becomes a 3-1 lead on the wild pitch. But then the adventure with Romano. Floor is yours, John. What did you notice from this guy?
Well, the first thing I noticed was you walk a guy, you hit a guy, it doesn't help your cause in any way. That's really the problem. I didn't think his pitching was poor. I felt like the Nationals did a nice job of getting the bat on some of those balls that really I didn't expect them to. But he has wild eyes, crazy eyes. The John Travolta eyes, that's really the biggest thing that I took away from that. Not bad.
No, he was horrible.
In his debut.
He was horrendous.
He was pretty bad.
I didn't think it was – I felt like some of those pitches were not terrible pitches. The Nationals somehow got a bat on it. And so I am giving him a bit of a pass. It wasn't good enough.
Well, I'm not out on the guy, but I'm not giving him a pass.
It was what you're saying.
Horrendous.
I don't think it was horrendous.
Well, the game went to extra innings because of that guy. All right, so let's get to extra innings.
That's not a great result, especially against a team that, like the Nats, is not good. That was my biggest problem with the whole evening. It's the Nationals. They were one of the worst teams I'd ever seen last year.
Yeah, they were bad.
And it doesn't seem like they're even in our echelon.
No, well, they're not.
What the heck is going on here?
All right, so
it's just extenuating circumstances that led to this.
So we got a 3-3 game. We go into extra innings. By the way, nice job. We skipped over the Kirkland thing, but Kirkland had a nice role in getting out of an inning that, to a large extent, he didn't really create. I mean, there's a bloop down the left field line, and there was a hit to center that he kind of thought Stott would get. But anyway, 3-3 game. Boom. 10th inning. Obviously, you start with a dude on second base, get another guy on base. Boom, with, I think, one of the two biggest hits of the night.
And the pitch to Boom. He swings and blasts it. Left center field up the alley, and that will get the job done. And one hops the wall. One run is home. Harper flying around third. He's going to score without a throw, and Alec Boom delivers a rocket double to left center. It's 5-3 Phillies.
All right, so that was big, but knowing the Phillies had already used a lot of their main relievers, you know, you can't feel, totally comfortable yet. But a couple of batters later, when JT did what he did, this is when you knew. Actually, I think it was the two batters later. This is when you knew the Phillies were going to win the game.
The first pitch from Salazar, hit in the air, down the right field line. It's pretty well hit. Long run, Cruz to the corner, reaching out. It's off his glove. Another run is home. Here comes Schwarber. Ball coming out of the corner, but JT is headed to third, and he's safe. Two more on the board, and the Phillies now lead it 7-3.
All right.
You know how awesome it is that JT came out of the box full speed, never, ever hesitated from the moment he hit that thing? Had he hesitated, it's possible he gets thrown out at third base, but he believed and he was rewarded.
He's one of the fastest catchers I've also ever
seen. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he really.
It was great to see that.
He's got wheels.
Great to see that he got rewarded for his persistence.
All right, so you can react to yesterday's Phillies win. Obviously, they closed it out in the bottom of the 10th. Devin was there covering the game for us at WIP. Devin, you were in the in the locker room afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
What was the – I'm not going to use the word
vibe.
Vibes. I just need a different word this year.
Yeah.
What was the mojo
The mood in the locker room.
Demeanor.
The temperament. What was going on in the locker room postgame?
I mean, you know, it's game one of 162. They were, you know, business as usual, not any celebrations. It was very quiet. It's always pretty quiet in there, especially in the regular
season. Rob Thompson
didn't
give a speech with 161 to go?
No, he did not. He did not. He spoke immediately after the game as well. And, you know, everyone kind of touched on the shadows. Even Zach Wheeler talked about the shadows because, yeah, the shadows prevented the bats on for both teams from being productive to start the game, but Zach Wheeler said he was using that to his advantage, and as he should have. So everyone touched on that, and it was just very much like, yeah, we're glad we won, and on to the next one. You know, going into an off day before our next game with a sour taste in our mouth, had we lost, would not have been a fun feeling.
Yeah.
And now they move on. They're very focused and locked in, it seems, this season. Like, they're not... I have yet to see any, like, crazy, you know, games and dumping water and the daycare shenanigans. I haven't seen any of that.
Yeah, they didn't do that after the game. Bohm was interviewed. There was no Stott coming out, March coming out. Mm-hmm. None of that to do that. So that was a noticeable difference. Yeah, there you go.
Can't have an Axel Foley reference and not play this.
Yeah. Definitely not Axl Rose. Definitely not. All right, good morning to you. Jenna Cameron, John Ritchie. It's 94 WIP. We've got Devin and Seltzer and Ray. And, of course, wonderful to have you with us. We'll make the turn next week into a reaction to a weekend of Phillies baseball. Now, all it is right now, of course, is one game. But there's a lot from that game you can react to. James, what was the biggest takeaway you had from the Phillies yesterday?
So I thought it was going to be something different early in the game, and then obviously it changed and went on. But I honestly don't think there's too much to take away from the first game of the year. Like, you know me, I'm very big on not overreacting to one game. But I will say it was nice to see them fight. It was nice to see Harper come through again in a big spot. And I think the takeaway is that, you know, as much as we want them to be a completely different baseball team than what they've been the last 4 years, for the most part, they're probably going to be a pretty similar baseball team. You know, I think that's my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable point. There was a moment late in the game, I forget which player, I think it was Marsh, where Rob Thompson was having a bunt.
It was Marsh, which was shocking.
I think it's an attempt by the manager to try to, you know, get them to play a little different. Now, it's also notable, it's probably their weakest starting hitter. So,
facing a lefty, too.
Exactly. Yep. So part of that is circumstantial. But I appreciate that Rob Thompson was trying to try something different.
I would appreciate it if he had replaced him at that point.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is you put in there Rojas. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, yeah, it's a problem. Cody Clemens, a lefty, too. So, Rhea,
what was your biggest takeaway from yesterday?
My biggest takeaway was, you know, somewhat of a positive thing. As I mentioned earlier, I didn't see them flailing about, you know, for the complaints of Trey Turner. He was 0-for-4. He took 13 or 14 pitches in his first two at-bats. I thought they helped run up the count. So the one guy I saw do it, it was Stott, and it was in the eighth inning, I believe. So that I liked better. I felt like even with the shadows, they were trying to work that guy and get him out.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to put it, and I actually agree. Like, this sounds like a weird statement, but I'll make it. Despite striking out 19 times, I don't think their at-bats were as bad as they were against the Mets.
They were not, 100%.
They were more professional strikeouts than professional.
It's game one, so for once I'm not trying to not overreact, but that's what I took from it. And, you know, the two guys who weren't good at the plate were Stott and Marsh.
Yeah.
That is concerning if that comes over from last season.
Yeah.
But Turner, I thought he was working the guy a little bit.
He was trying at it. Yeah. He definitely did. I agree with that. Hey, let's get to the two different Twitter poll questions of the day that we have today, both brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin Chevy is your Corvette headquarters. Have you dreamt about owning a Corvette? Well, now is the time. Visit ArminChevy.com. Together, let's drive. First poll question, do you give the Phillies hitters a pass for all the strikeouts yesterday due to the shadows, yes or no? Second poll question, whose side do you support more in the LeBron-Stephen A. feud? Three choices here, LeBron, Stephen A., or neither. You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter.
I'm leaning towards neither now because the two of them are beginning to annoy me.
Yeah, I get it. That's probably a lot of people in America. So let's go around the horn here. Bad TV show, but let's do it. Whose side are you on? All right, I'm pro Stephen A. because I think his main point was that LeBron's egotistical, sensitive, and totally misread the comments that Stephen A. made weeks ago about his son, which really weren't about his son. It was about LeBron strong-arming to the NBA to get his son on his team, when clearly the guy is not an NBA-caliber player. I mean, that's obvious. John, pro Stephen A., pro LeBron, or neither?
Yeah, I'm more pro Stephen A., but as of late, things are moving to where it's hard to be pro anyone.
Is Stephen A. taking it too far? Do you think he should just stop?
Yeah.
I don't know. Where does it stop? I thought it was over after the first debacle.
Well, here's the problem, though, for being over Stephen A. yesterday.
So, disastrous.
So just to be, and I get it, like there is something to be said for Stephen A. maybe should stop. However, LeBron said an awful lot about him 2 days ago, including like he's sitting in his tidy white, he's eating ice cream, you know, sitting back enjoying this. So yesterday, Stephen A. had his TV show. I mean, that's a lot to not respond to.
So did it just, I truly have just been kind of zoning this out. Like I have not been paying attention because I don't really care. But the start of this, it officially started with Stephen A. making the comments.
Well, we're going to start. So who knows what happened in years gone by. But the start for this latest go around would seem to be when Stephen A. made comments about LeBron's influence on his son joining the Lakers. And hey, everybody, don't kid yourself. LeBron strong-armed the league. He didn't use that phrase, but basically in a nutshell.
That's why LeBron went up to
him. LeBron's acting like a phony for not acting like he orchestrated this. That was basically Stephen A.'s
point. He was
in
the wrong.
Then I'm team Stephen A., because I agree.
I agree, too. James, team who?
Oh, I think LeBron deserves all that he has coming to him. I'm definitely team Stephen A., but I will say to your point, especially the Kobe thing, like not even just getting it wrong. Like it's just like, I felt like you don't, I feel like Stephen A.'s turning me closer to neither. Then I was fully, but it's like you don't need to go there. Like that's just like even if he had been right about it, it felt like uncomfortable to listen to that part.
Yeah, no, I get it. And Rhea, you feel you're clearly in the neither category.
I'm neither now, and I mean I've known Stephen for God 25, 30 years, but you know when it the pettiness is because everybody I pretty much think everybody was on his side because we all know what LeBron did. LeBron got his son into the league.
Yes, he did.
And so, you know, but the listing, it's getting beyond, and I love a petty feud. I think it's fun, but this one's getting ridiculous.
I got to tell you, there's a big chunk of me that still wishes one of those random NBA teams had just taken the kid with like the 50th pick.
Totally, like the Hornets
just
or
said,
something.
All right, LeBron, let's see if you sign with us or not.
I mean, stupid Rich Paul thing.
Especially
they want to make
if the,
Rich Paul mad.
Right, especially if the Celtics had done it. Just because
that would have just been hilarious.
Right?
Yeah.
If they just said
that would have been the pettiest of petty, and I would have loved it.
And it would have been absurd because everyone knows the kid didn't deserve to be the 50th pick, but would LeBron had really left the Lakers?
It would have been awesome.
The whole thing was so weird. But I support Stephen A. a lot more on this than LeBron. And if LeBron is in his feelings over being called the second best player of all time, then, dude, I don't know what to tell you, man. Because you're not Mike. You're really good. You're really incredible. There's no question. You're not Mike. All right, let's go to the phones. Chuck and Cherry Hill. Chuck, good morning.
The other one, that it wouldn't matter one bit. Yes.
Chuck!
Oh,
Chuck!
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, I missed you one day. I'm going to rapid fire 7 points. You're quick. They're bullet points.
7 points.
And then we'll, no, real fast. Alvarado's going to be a beast. Keep an eye on him. He'll be the guy. JT, arm looks better, and his speed looks better.
Yep.
I think he's really worked out a lot. Ballum, I think, is headed to elite status. I really believe he can be our MVP offensively. I love Harper. You know that, okay? The sun was an obvious factor. They were missing by a foot in the first couple innings. I mean, you could tell. To Rhea's point, Turner does make a major contribution, 20 pitches and 3 at-bats. That's eating it up. I mean, that's fantastic. You know, if you're going to go for 4, use up 20 pitches, pretty good thing.
Yeah, I'll add this, Chuck. That's part of how Bryce Harper gets to face the reliever in the 7th inning instead of the starter.
It had so much impact. And to Dombrowski's point, about it really doesn't matter. I can't do his voice. It really doesn't. So you took the 100 RBIs and the 100 runs he had up top last year in Schwarber, and you put it down, but the outcome's pretty much the same. It really is neutral when you do the analytic deep dive on that stuff. So that was good to see. Now, would you have done this, Joe? I want to put you in the 8th inning. We've got a 2-1 lead, a tight game. You know you'd love to score that 3rd run. Kepler leads off with a double. You got Rojas on your bench. Would you, at that point, But Rojas, and it's just all that little stuff we talk about that sometimes doesn't go noticed. When you put Rojas in the run for Kepler, you don't expect him to come back up. You're 2-1 lead, but you'd love to score that third run. I think that's a glaring spot for a pinch runner. Now, keep in mind, there's a single by Casty, and Kepler doesn't score
stops
on it.
Third,
too many,
yeah.
Not too
well,
many
so, for, so full disclosure, so Chuck, full disclosure, I hadn't thought of it in the moment. Okay. I think it's a reasonable thing to consider. You're right.
I think that's playoff baseball. I don't think that's regular season.
Well, it like, can least, be.
It can be, but it like I be. Think Kepler is in. Like it ended up going extra innings. Like,
yeah.
I get your point, Chuck. And maybe if they had a bigger lead, but I don't know. I wouldn't have done that. In that
and
spot.
I'd also say this, Chuck. And I'm not trying to not answer it, but I'll say this. I personally need to see Kepler play a little more to know how good he is defensively. Like I gotta see the guy a little bit.
I can already tell you. I'm not trying to be a you know what, but yep. I can already tell you. For a fact, there's one ball that's got to be caught by a major. The one ball that drops in the pocket there was up.
Yeah, that wasn't that was a perfectly placed ball.
I think to James's point, isn't it better, James, if you do incorporate more players in the win, and that's such an obvious spot to pinch run? Doesn't that make Rojas?
I just don't. I get your point. I just don't think it's an obvious spot to pinch run in the regular season.
I wouldn't call it obvious. Yeah. I consider it something to consider, but not obvious. Chuck, give me an answer for a great movie duo.
Was it a movie? Mickey and Minnie Mouse? Does that work?
Well, sure.
Probably
so,
along the line somewhere.
Were they in Fantasia? I think that was Mickey's first
just
movie.
Just Mickey.
Right?
Look, I don't think it's a winning answer for movie duo anyway. If it were just regular duo, but again, this is movie duo.
Yeah. I mean, nothing comes to mind with me for Mickey Mouse
no
in a movie.
No idea. No, it just seems like they might be on, like,
they're
commercial,
just like Disney
cartoons
characters.
Together.
Right.
Like, I'm
yeah.
sure
family.
There is a movie along the way on Disney or this that has them in
if
it.
If it doesn't
it's
strike
not,
any of this,
yeah,
then it's
exactly.
not good enough. Yeah. Let's go to Keith in Northeast Philly. Keith, good morning.
Yo, what's going on, guys?
Hi, morning. Keith.
What up, pal?
Yeah, Joe, I got to rip you real quick, man. That was a real obvious. Seltzer worded that perfectly.
Nah, not really.
Yeah.
Everyone will tell you, and you just will
all right, James,
never
agree. James, say the question again problem. As you had it. Say,
oh, my God. We're going back
I gotta
to
hear
this.
I got to hear this
what
again.
What Philly player has the longest tenure in the major league?
Exactly.
At the major league,
what
at
player
the major
on the Phillies?
No, because he's implying that the Phillies
Joe,
player
Joe,
has
Joe,
the longest
Joe,
tenure in
Joe,
all of the
Joe,
major leagues.
Joe, the question is what player on the Phillies? It starts with what player on the Phillies. So
yep.
automatically you know. The answer has to be a player on the Phillies.
But
that's
he doesn't
it.
Have the
he
longest
the
tenure
it doesn't
in
matter.
The major
It doesn't
leagues.
Matter. The first part of the question says what
nah,
player on the Phillies. Like,
no,
the,
nope.
What?
Dude, you're so annoying.
No.
Yeah, I'm so glad to see that I'm the only loss you have in 2025. Still riding high
well,
on
it's
that
so
one.
Rare.
Good
and,
job,
and
Keith.
You should be proud of yourself.
Keith, get through
okay,
again.
No,
beat
I mean,
him
on,
again.
Keith, the only 3-time winner, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
how about me?
Wow.
I got 279.
Yeah, well, he's got a winning record against you. Just I'm just throwing that out there. He's 3-2 against you. So just putting that out
one.
There.
Come on. 3-1.
Wow.
3-1, even better.
3-1.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Impressive.
Keith, what do you got on the LeBron Stephen A thing?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of either, but I think what started with LeBron was when Stephen A. kind of called out his parenting skills. I think that's
well, of
what
course,
LeBron
yeah.
said. Yeah,
but hold on, but Keith, hold on. He didn't call out his parenting skills. He called out his NBA influence using his role as an NBA superstar to get his kid on his team and then act like he didn't use that influence.
Right.
That's not parenting skills. Parenting skills is, you know, should your kid go to bed at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock? Parenting skills is it acceptable to have someone in this area be a Dallas Cowboys fan?
Yeah,
that's
no,
your kid.
Think,
that's parenting
yeah,
skills.
Yeah, I think that's just LeBron took that to heart once he
LeBron
said like
LeBron misconstrued what Stephen A. Because I agree
Stephen
with
a
you.
Is
LeBron, LeBron
him out.
Interpreted it that way. But that's
yeah.
not what Stephen A. was saying.
Call
it,
yeah,
Stephen
yeah,
A. is calling him out for abusing
yeah.
his privilege.
Correct.
For abusing his
yeah.
his ability to sway the entire
correct.
NBA.
And then act like
yeah.
he didn't do it. The combination,
no,
doing
that.
It,
yeah, no,
and then acting like he didn't do it.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what Stephen A. was saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He took it the wrong way, and then, but yeah, like you said, with Stephen A.'s going over the top now, it's like
it's a lot.
Yeah, I think secretly ESPN likes it though. I think ESPN likes it though. That shows.
Oh, ESPN loves
for sure.
Are you kidding me?
They're loving this. Yeah, for sure.
Well, here's all you need to know, Keith. Yesterday, during the shows, not when ESPN put on baseball games, but during the shows, because I saw an article about this, there was a lot more conversation yesterday on opening day of baseball before the games were played. There was more conversation about LeBron and Stephen A. and Pat McAfee than opening day of Major League Baseball across the nation. And for baseball, that's a shame. It really is.
Oh, it is, yeah. Oh, and he does have a huge ego, LeBron, like making it bigger.
You think?
And, yeah, right.
All right, Keith, give me an answer, bud. Give me a great movie duo.
I'm going to say Woody and Buzz.
Oh, Woody and Buzz, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Like that. That's right. All right, so speaking of answers, James, you answered this question far different than a lot of listeners that weighed in on our poll a couple weeks ago. Because we had a poll question 2 or 3 weeks ago about who is the Phillies' second-best starter. And, of course, Lizardo's going to pitch tomorrow.
Well, I think it's Christopher Sanchez. I think Wheeler and Sanchez,
I'm getting confused. I was thinking you said Lizardo. My fault.
I think Sanchez is a Cy Young candidate.
You're right. My fault. But, James, give us the Lizardo thing. We're going to see this guy tomorrow. Obviously, some people watch spring training. Many don't. If you do, it's an inning or so. Give us the Lizardo, because he's the Game 2 pitcher tomorrow afternoon. What do we need to know about this Lizardo dude?
Yeah, he's super talented. Again, he used to be the top prospect in the sport. He's one of those guys who just between injury and consistency hasn't been able to put it together altogether. He had a great year in 2023. He pitched game one of that Marlins-Phillies series here. He pitched pretty well. I think it was like 6 innings, 2 or 3 runs. Like, pitched well in that. The Stott Grand Slam game, I think it ended up being. Lizardo's really, really talented at, like, high-level talent. Like, he has ace potential. Like, if he can put all the skills and tools he has together, he could be an ace in Major League Baseball. Like, he's that talented. He just hasn't gotten there yet. And I think you have to feel good about this Phillies group with Caleb Cotham and the pitching development group, what they've done so far, whether it's obviously Christopher Sanchez, which is a massive development win. I mean, even a guy like Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler came over from the Mets, could never stay healthy for a season, never really put it together. Now he's been the best pitcher in baseball, or one of them, for the last few years. So, like,
Hoffman and Strom would be another example.
Joe, a great example. So Alvarado, the way they've gotten him back again, Ranger. Yep. So they've done such a good job with that here. I think this is the perfect kind of clay to grab and mold the way they want it. So
Lizardo was the top prospect in the sport, Jimmy?
Yeah, a while back. Yeah, when he was at the Athletics.
So what we're talking about here is Lizardo, once upon a time, the top prospect in the sport. We got Andrew Painter waiting in the wings, who is, we've been told, the best pitching prospect in the history of the Phillies organization. That's a lot. What we're talking about here is some big expectations for these arms.
That's part of why Ranger's not signing a contract. I mean, what, you know, the Phillies, and part of it's the back, but part of it is the Phillies are not as
desperate to sign
Ranger as they would be if those guys didn't exist. James, who did they give up for Lizardo?
So they gave up Starlin Cabo, who's like their fourth best prospect or something like that. He is a shortstop who has the scale that scouts use is 20 to 80. 20 is the worst, 80 is the best. He is considered an 80-grade shortstop. He is like the best defensive shortstop in the minors, or one of them. He just hasn't gotten the bat there. But he's a top 100 prospect. They give up a legitimate prospect to get Lizardo.
Let me ask this question on behalf of many listeners listening right now. Why is the scale 20
Dude,
to 80
Joe,
instead of 0
Joe,
to 100?
My whole life, I've never understood. It's one of the weirdest things. I mean, I'm sure there's a reason. I've just never.
Yeah, you know what it is? A dumb reason.
Dumb reason. It's a dumb
Let's
reason.
Let's go to the phones. Also, coming up shortly, we're going to get to the audio of Danny Briere from yesterday, canning John Tortorella and what Briere said about it. And I'm going to give you a Tortorella comparison to someone else who got fired this century. Well, I'll give you that in a moment. I don't know if people have connected the dots, but I think there's a direct correlation, one to the other. Let's go to John in Allentown right now. Hi, John.
Joe.
John.
You know, I wanted to call in all morning. As soon as I heard Richie talking about that ridiculously horrible movie, you know, with Wolverine and...
I don't watch that stuff.
It was so bad, Joe. Oh, my God. It was so bad.
Look, someday I hope to get into some of these movies from the last 15 years.
Wait,
it was irreverent and funny, and it was fascinating. It's fun. It doesn't have to be a great movie. It was a lot of fun.
What, Wolverine, Deadpool?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie.
That was horrible.
Okay.
Anyway, guys, Tortorella, don't care because it doesn't matter. Whether he stayed or got fired, it's not changing anything with this team.
Well, not right now. It's not right now. It's not.
And I really think that, in my opinion, this is my humble opinion, I think John Tortorella got bait and switched. Like, he was expecting something else.
Well, I agree.
And they just ripped that thing apart on him. And
there was a regime change. Yeah, look, John, 9 months after he was hired, there was a regime change, and the rebuild became a lot more substantial than I think he thought it would be.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. And the Phillies, shadow smatters. 13 punch outs in 5 innings. I don't want to hear that. Come on. That's too much. Yeah.
Well, it was quite a bit. All right, Johnny, give me an answer, my man. A great movie duo.
R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Oh, that's a big one right there.
Yeah, that's a great one.
And they were the bickering type. Okay, I like that answer quite a bit.
Really, really solid.
All right, so let's get to the Brière thing, but let's actually start with Tortorella. Let's go back a couple days ago. I'm sure most people are familiar with what he said, but just in case you forgot, and it's worth a re-listen anyway because it's so absurd. I mean, whether he liked that the rebuild was extended and was as deep as it was, it is what it is. I mean, dude, you're getting paid millions of dollars to be the Flyers coach. Like, deal with it. Or handle it with greater class after the season and go to your superiors and say, can you let me out of this? And maybe they would have. But anyway, he goes public. Listen to what Tortorella said.
When you're in this type of situation and you're losing all the time and there's nothing at the end of the tunnel for you, there's certainly going to be some frustration. But this falls on me. I'm not really interested in learning how to coach this type, this in this type of season where we're at right now. But I have to do a better job. So this falls on me, getting the team prepared to play the proper way until we get to the end.
So I know yesterday, I think James, was either you or Rhea, one of you said you think he may have been intentional
that
with
was
that
me,
one comment that maybe he wanted to get fired.
Yeah, I think
maybe.
So.
Maybe. It's certainly possible. I will tell you this. I think it had a direct correlation for the timing of his firing. I'm going to give you a comp from this century. No Philadelphia coach has gotten fired more quickly after a comment that should not have been said since Chip Kelly, if you remember, 2015, with one game to go in the regular season. And here's why. Eagles played a game on a Saturday. Chip did a press conference. And remember, he had got all the power about 7, 8, 9 months before. They got all the power. Howie's in the closet. Howie's not even his office. His actual office gets moved. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even have his office anymore. And Chip got all the power. And then Chip gave an answer to a question. I don't remember if it was the Saturday.
Right.
Remember this, Rhea? I don't know if it was Saturday after the game or the day after on a Sunday press conference.
I had nothing to do with it.
Yes, I don't pick the players.
Yep.
I think the exact line, while technically true, was so not fair to say. I think the line was something like, I'm not the player personnel director.
Yeah.
Like something like, which it's true, like someone else is the player personnel director.
Yeah.
Someone else is in charge of college scouting. Someone else, you know, pro this and that. But the bottom line is Chip Kelly had acquired final say. He had the power. And I am and will always be convinced that Chip Kelly got fired by Jeffrey Lurie on that Tuesday because Lurie is like, wait a minute, dude. I just gave you all the power. You chose Kiko. You chose DeMarco Murray. You chose Sam Bradford. Don't go public and say, I'm not in charge of this stuff. So I really do think the timing of that was because of that. Maybe he would have been fired the next week. And listen, maybe Tortorella would have been fired 3 weeks from now.
That was what day of the week?
He got fired on a Tuesday.
Yeah, but why did he wait until Tuesday?
I think that Lurie had to digest the whole thing. Like, holy hell, did he really go where I think he went?
But it really is unprecedented that he went for the Tuesday firing.
John, that was like an accelerated concept with one game to go in the season.
Yeah, right.
One game to go.
At that point, it's just such a strange time to do it.
I think Lurie was processing it. It was a Tuesday night around 6 o'clock. And I think Lurie was processing, like, holy hell. Wait a minute.
It was very annoying when he did it, too.
And
we were all on vacation.
Oh.
Had to come in the next morning.
That's wild. Anyway,
it was insane.
215-592-9494. Let's listen to what Danny Brière said yesterday, his justification, his reasoning for why he fired Tortorella.
It's not one thing. It's a series of things that have happened. And probably a little bit more in the last 3 weeks that escalated since probably around the trade deadline, right after that. So, like I said, it's not one thing specific. It's an accumulation that have happened probably more often lately.
Those comments, obviously, he made on Tuesday after the Maple Leafs game, I'm sure you saw. Did that play any role whatsoever in the decision you made?
It's one of the things that have happened along the way. Specific reason, and there's not one specific reason. It's one of the things that have happened along the way.
All right, Briere yesterday. Look, the Flyers got to get this going. You can't rebuild forever. I am glad to see Tortorella go, especially with the attitude he presented a couple nights ago. But at some point, no matter who the hell the coach is, they got to get a coach players. Like, not two players or four players. Frickin' players. Players. I mean, I'll just take you back to the last Flyers team that really did something special. Be 2010, obviously. Really, you know, they got to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup. Think about who was on that team. And it's not like this was even a great team. They were a 7 seed. But think of who was on this team. You had Mike Richards, you had Jeff Carter, you had Chris Pronger, you had Claude Giroux, you had Danny Briere, you had Timonen.
Simone Gagné.
You had Simone Gagné.
Wow.
Like, you had players. You had players. You need players. You need guys that can play. This team doesn't have enough. All right, let's go to the phones. 215-592-9494. You had Hartnell on that team as well. You had a lot of really. They weren't spectacular, other than Pronger, obviously, at that stage. Giroux wasn't spectacular yet, but you had a lot of guys that were above average, and this team does not have that. Let's talk to Ike in Southwest Philadelphia. Good morning, Ike.
What's up, y'all?
Hey, buddy.
Hi, Ike.
Hey. So here's my thing. First of all, I'm Team LeBron all the way. Or whatever. So I did get a chance to hear y'all opinions on it. And here's why I'm Team LeBron. First of all, he stepped to Stephen A. It could have been over then. But with Stephen A, the next day, he went on a little podcast tour because he went on Gilbert Arenas and them podcasts. He talked to other people about it. Of course, he talked on his show. And
yeah,
he made the
rounds. Yep.
Yeah, so then he gets offended, and he don't want to act like it could have been something more than what it was, because he's seen all the comments. And then you think LeBron and them, see, that's the part that I got an issue with, like the media. Like, a lot of media get to say whatever they want, and it's borderline personal.
Some of it is. That's right. That's right.
And there's stuff behind the scenes that we don't know, obviously.
Yep.
And whatnot. So then you get, you not you, I'm just saying the media cuts mm-hmm. their pearls when a player clapped back. Because I seen Matt Barnes say, hey, LeBron been in the league for 22 years. People been clapping at him and saying fly stuff about him for 22 years. And now he doesn't clap back outwardly a whole lot. But 22 years, I got no issues with it. Because these dudes get on their shows and say fly stuff all year and make $100 million.
Yeah. No, look, Ike, I think you bring up a lot of good points. No, Ike, I think you bring up great points. I will say this, though. If Stephen A, with the initial volley back, doesn't, and it was more than a volley, he hit him pretty hard back publicly. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, in light of that video having surfaced from a couple weeks ago, then people would think Stephen A's a punk or got punked. Like, when that video goes around, LeBron's in his face, and there's nothing Stephen A can do in that moment. First off, LeBron walks away. So it's not like LeBron even stays to engage beyond about 7 or 8 seconds. And I get it. It's during an NBA game. But it also goes to show it was pretty childish of LeBron to handle it there then. In the middle of a game. Yeah. I mean, what can Stephen A actually do? So LeBron walks away, and the video surfaces. If Stephen A doesn't go public with it, Stephen A looks like a chump.
But Stephen A, the one who said, because LeBron never said I was going to hit him or nothing like that. Stephen A said, if you just touched me like that, I would have swung on him.
I know.
And that's what made him.
He also said he would have gotten his butt beat.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
I know.
That was an aggressive comment. He was the one that took it to that.
I agree.
And then LeBron said, but that's the part that it's funny how people leave that part around. But he the one that took it to the level of I would swung on him.
I know, if you're Stephen A. in that moment, because we've all been in confrontational moments, and usually it does not get physical, but sometimes it does. You got to imagine Stephen A. during those 8 or 9 seconds was thinking, he might hit me.
He thought he was going to get Jim Rome. That's what he thought. He could have got Jim Rome.
I mean, LeBron was in his face, man. I mean, he was.
Yeah,
you know,
but let's be real. Also, he don't have that history.
No, he does not have that history.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, come on. And here's this is the last thing. I'm sitting there seeing all the media, and I'm not talking about y'all, but I've seen people from Canty and Perkins and all them dudes sitting there talking about, oh, taking up for him. But guess what? Who, they the same dudes who say, Stephen A., help them get into the broadcast.
Yeah, I know.
It may, it may not be family nepotism, yeah, but it's nepotism. And if you want to go family nepotism, you can go with the Chris Collinsworth son getting on there.
I agree.
So stuff happens. All the coach, you see so many coaches and stuff like that. So all this. Oh, he got his son drafted and everything. How many times I listen to the radio and on TV, right, say a second round pick in the NBA?
But I agree. But I'm going to give you one more but, because I agree with you. And this is a fascinating call. But I will say this: like, there's a lot of people, myself included, who have criticized Chris Collinsworth for how bad his son is and the fact that his son has that gig.
100%.
Like, there's a difference between someone who, what's an example?
Ian Eagle's son, Noah Eagle, is fantastic.
Great.
Okay, yeah. I think Joe Buck's good. A lot of people don't like him. Yeah. Obviously, he was Jack Buck's son. Yeah. But the point
is,
like,
fantastic.
I think he's fantastic, too. But my point, I think you get it. Like, if someone is legit good on their own, good for them. All good.
They grew up in the family business.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, I think the problem would be if Chris Collinsworth, let's say we had him on the show and we asked him about it, because I have been critical of him. If Chris Collinsworth acted like, A, he had no influence in his son getting the gig, and B, that he didn't do something to get him the gig, and that he feels disrespected to even ask him about getting him the gig, then it'd be like, dude, you're not keeping it real.
Let me just say this, though,
sure,
Joe.
Sure.
You know, like how sometimes when, like, I remember when I'm used Andy Reid, you know, Rhea and Angelo's favorite coach. I'm going to use Andy Reid, for example. People used to be so mad when he always said, I got to do a better job, right?
Right.
But then it was a game when Dave Akers missed the field goal, and he said that the kicker missed it, and everybody was mad at him. They said, you should have took a bullet, and you should have just said, it's my fault, or the team's. So they all do the phony stuff. And then
Andy was ticked after that game. I thought Andy was out of line. Completely. I mean, part of why he was out of line is that was David Akers' 19th playoff game with the Eagles, 19th, and it was the first time he cost them a playoff game. So I'm not saying Andy Reid should be in a good mood about it, but I also think a little bit of grace of one of the great Eagles kickers of all time. Like, it stinks that he missed two kicks, but you don't have to throw him under the bus.
He also knew what David was going through, too.
Yeah, point is, he was just telling, sometimes when you tell the truth, it could be worse.
Yeah. Tremendous phone call, bud. Right, you can win the $100 gift card.
Let me give you my people.
Yes, sir.
My duo. I'm gonna go in your wheelhouse. Let me go Akeem and Simi.
Oh, sure.
That's a great answer, dude. I love that answer.
Yeah. Coming to America, that duo is really good.